Hello there, and welcome to the Thank You Fellows podcast. My name is Caleb, and I'm joined by my father, Dr. Scott Keith, and by Dr. Adam Francisco to continue our Why You Should series of episodes.
That's funny.
That is funny. The Thank You Fellows is brought to you by the 1517 Podcast Network of shows. You can go to 1517.org/podcasts to see all of the shows there. 1517 is, of course, more than a podcast network. You can go to 1517.org to see the homepage, where every day there are new featured articles, preaching helps, videos, conferences. We even have a bookstore. You can go check that all out at 1517.org. Okay. Why you should. And we can get to why it was funny here for a second, because the title of this episode is going to be Why You Should Delete Social Media.
Is it why you should or why you should not delete social media?
We could add the why you should not for those of us who like our social media in the room, which I know is both of you, two teenage girls. But
Kidding. Wait a minute. What?
But why would the Thinking Fellows comment on this? Why? Well, number one, if you type in why you should in Google, this is like number four. So
wasn't number one go to college last episode?
Last episode was number one. Yeah. And, you know, we prioritize search engine optimization around these parts, at least a little bit.
As we castigate social media.
But it's interesting that that's such a searched term. It means a lot of people are thinking about it. And the other thing that I know that is interesting is I haven't deleted my accounts, but I have deleted all of the apps off my phone. Now, I still go look at my social media accounts, you know, maybe once a week or so to check private messages, because people do try to reach out to me because of Thinking Fellows and 1517 and stuff. But I also heard, Dad, that you deleted your Facebook account this week.
I did. I had...
You had a Facebook account?
Okay, so here's the thing. Well, yeah, you had a Facebook account. Don't even.
Yeah,
look
but
at
not
me
for
like
years now.
Oh, please.
Well, and we can get to why Adam had to delete his.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's not even talk about Facebook.
I'm restarting that thing soon.
No, let's not even talk about Facebook for you, buddy. No, I had a Facebook account. So I actually remember it was like 2008 or something like that. My wife and I were talking to Jeff Mallinson on the phone, and he went on one of his Mallinson sort of rants about people who refuse to have Facebook accounts. And Joy and I didn't have Facebook accounts at the time, so we're like, oh, maybe Mallinson's right. So I started up a Facebook account, right?
Hilarious.
And then I had it through the time I was at Concordia. It was difficult to have sort of, at that time especially, because this was even, I don't know if it was prior to Instagram, but it was sort of prior to Instagram's, like, fame, prevalence. Yeah. You know, and I had RDs and RAs working for me, and they did a lot of stuff on Facey Page, and so it kind of made sense. When I started 1517, I got really sort of
well, social media is like ground level marketing for a lot of people.
It was marketing, and it still is for 1517. That's why it's an ironic conversation for us, because we're an online organization that uses social media to promote the wares on our website. So that's kind of funny. But I had 5,000 people following me at one point, and I switched over to a public account, which is when I pretty much stopped paying attention to it. I kind of gave it over to the social media person at 1517 and hadn't done anything with it for 3 years. In fact, when I logged on to delete it, there were about like 5,000 messages on there that I'd never seen. And like from people, like family members and stuff like that I'd never seen.
I get that all the time. I have a family on my wife's side of the family. Her dad uses Facebook Messenger. I will not use Facebook Messenger for various reasons.
I mean, there literally could have been one on there.
I get messages from him, and he's like, "Didn't you see my message?" And it's like, "Oops."
There literally could have been a message on there, like from my aunt, like, "Scott, give me a call. Your uncle's in the hospital," and I wouldn't have freaking known it. So
yeah.
So I actually last week I just kind of got sick of it being there and me not ever interacting with it, because I thought the disingenuousness of it finally caught up with me. And so I called up our person that oversees the social media people, and I said, "Hey, I want to delete my account. What do you think?" And they said, "Yeah, go for it." And so he checked it and said, "Yeah, you know, it's not getting much interaction anyway, so we deleted it.
They don't get interaction unless you live by them.
Yeah, and I definitely didn't. I think for a while when I first started working for Jagged Word, I was posting on it all the time, but that just gets you into trouble anyway.
So
I stopped that. It's like, way to get in a fight. Post a blog that you wrote and just watch people tell you what an awful person you are. It's basically, you'd get like, that's so great and moving. Thank you for writing that. And then you'd be like, you're horrible. Are you even a Christian? And I'm going, I don't want to do this anymore.
If you're me, you can get dragged into that stuff. Perhaps we should do a thing that I think might be difficult. It echoes some old quotes, but what is social media? I don't know, but I know it when I see it, kind of,
like pornography.
Yeah, rings a bell here, right? It's hard to define because there's so many different platforms, and there's things that I think you wouldn't call social media at first glance, but probably are. I would include something like YouTube in that, right? Like having a YouTube account and watching and interacting with lots of videos has become, you know, I don't think you would call it social media in the same way Facebook is, but it certainly looks that way when I poke around on there, when I spend time on YouTube, right? People are commenting, interacting. So I think at a base level, social media is an online platform designed for the sharing and like sort of commenting of information. And now information, it's not just intellectual information. It can be personal news. You know, I've been married, that we all know this through Facebook, like relationship statuses, right? I've been married. I have a boyfriend. I've been dumped. We had a child. You can do this through statuses, and so you're sharing that information. If you go on a vacation, maybe you'll post those pictures on Instagram. So that's information. People can see who you are, where you've been, what you've done, type of thing. If you're on Twitter, you're probably sharing opinions. That's information. And so they're platforms for the mass sharing of information from one person to a whole lot of people, and we call those typically followers on there. And so that's why I think even things like YouTube would count, right? Anybody could have a YouTube channel. You could post there. But if you're watching or you're subscribed to a particular channel, maybe even a podcast, you're looking for one person to share information with a lot of people, their subscriber, their follower, their listener base.
Yeah. And so as an organization, you know, I think a lot of people interact with the stuff that we produce on a day-to-day basis through the social media outlets. I mean, according to the people who report on these things for us, a lot of people do. There's obviously, and I'd be interested to hear Adam's experience on some of this. There's obviously like some definite evil that can come out of it. I don't think anyone would debate that the social media has brought out in all of us things that we say now that we wouldn't to people that we wouldn't have said prior to social media if we were talking to them face to face. Like let me take it this way. I have literally had people tell me for writing a blog that I thought was a perfectly orthodox blog, got on comments and told me things like, I don't even think you're a Christian if you say that. Or I remember at one point we were recording Thinking Fellows in our garage, and somebody had posted something on social media and we were in the garage and we were on a break talking about it, and Caleb was reading it to us. I don't know if it was off Twitter or Facebook or what, but they had literally commented on it that everybody that agrees with whatever was said on this blog is an adulterer.
Ah, I remember that.
Yeah, and I remember Adam and I looking at each other going, I've been faithfully married for over 20 years. And I think we don't reply on things anymore, but I think you replied that to this person and they automatically got back on and said, because we said we've been faithfully married for 20 years. And I think the guy said something like, so far.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy cow.
You should have given him my address.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If this dude were sitting down face to face with us, would never have said that.
I also think he wouldn't have said it
out of common decency. He maybe wouldn't have said it out of fear of getting his butt kicked.
You
wouldn't have said it.
You also might not spend time with people who are in such fierce disagreement with you, right? Like, what social situation are you going to electively spend time with somebody who already knows they don't like you, your opinions, they disagree with you on fundamental things, you know, outside of maybe the workplace? You know, even if you run into somebody like that at a bar, right, you're not going to talk to them about what you...
I think these, they call them echo chambers. I listen to podcasts. These echo chambers make it so that things that are actually minor disagreements are blown up into sort of massive, you can't exist anymore in this universe if you believe that, disagreements. I mean...
And the reason why... the reason why is because I actually think people have a sense for how quickly the information can spread online, right? So if you and I have a theological disagreement online, the reason it gets amped up is not just because the social boundary that stops you and I from punching each other in the face is gone, but also because we both understand the consequences of the other person's wrong idea catching fire online. If I say something that somebody disagrees with, the worry is that my words are going to become truth to hundreds, if not thousands, of people because of the influence and speed at which particular people can harness social media. Now, I've never successfully been able to do that, but some people do, right? And so the fear is that the person who disagrees with you, no matter how much evidence you have to the contrary that they're wrong, can incite a large audience to believe the same things as them.
A seemingly large audience, I think, is the other thing here.
Yeah. And so there's, I don't know, Adam?
I'm just thinking, I wonder what Dr. Rosenblatt would have to say to this conversation.
He'd hate that we're doing it. So now that we've established that, let's move on. Like, he would absolutely hate that we're doing this episode. The spirit of the Thinking Fellows has been defiled.
Yeah.
No.
But it's a pertinent issue. I think, actually, especially sort of in theological circles, because I think theological, political, sort of cultural circles, this is where this has all got blown out of shape. It would occur to me as we're having this conversation that I have a good friend who lives in Michigan. I just saw him, with whom I disagree with politically a lot. And yet we don't interact on the socials at all. But we interact in person, and when we do, it's a very enjoyable time. Even when we have political conversations that we disagree with, it's civil, you know, and it's I can completely disagree with the way he handles things, the way he thinks things through, but he's at least thinking things through, and when we have conversations, they're at least thought-through conversations, and I think this goes for theology too. And I don't want to discount sort of what social media has done to promote. I know it's a political phrase, but I don't actually know why it is, because I'm not using it in the sort of political realm here, kind of cancel culture, because this exists in our field too. You can very easily now get canceled for wrong theological ideas on something.
Yeah.
Here, or what's the word for deplatformed that you say all the time?
Deplatformed.
Doxed.
That's the one I'm looking for.
Doxed
is more exposed, right?
Yes, it is exposing. It is pulling something into light that was hidden.
That's what was attempted
on you?
On me from my Facebook account. It was interesting screenshots from like 5 years prior of things I shared to my wife's Facebook page, mostly satire, like Babylon Bee articles. One was an article that was satire, I think, though it's probably true. The title was something like "Why Conservative Women Are Prettier" or something like that.
Yeah.
And that was sent to the Chicago Tribune. That and a few other things
to
from
the
Babylon Bee, clearly satire, as evidence of my sexism and discrimination or something like that.
Now,
did the Chicago Tribune care about you
telling your wife that
she was pretty?
Yeah. So let's boil this down. So. Because I actually think this will help with a broader point. So what, by admission here, what Adam was attempting to do was tell his wife that she's pretty. That's a very nice thing to do.
Yeah. Six years prior, so somebody was trolling me.
Yeah.
It's almost like you're saying, I wouldn't tell her she's pretty now, but 6 years ago.
I would have told her she was pretty.
No.
And
by that, I mean, somebody was watching this stuff and just, there are people out there who have files of people they hate or dislike. And they're just keeping screenshots of everything they've said in the socials. And that's
the lesson is that social media is is two different things, and it's not transparent about those things at once. It tells you that what you're having are personal, that's why it's social, conversations with another human being. And what you're not, is it's like you're having a public recorded conversation with an audience in an auditorium. And that audience could be 25 people, and it could be 2,500 people, maybe 25,000 if you're really lucky or something, you know. But that conversation that you intend to be between you and one person is actually a panel discussion being recorded and commented on and shared. And that's what's sort of dangerous about it, right? Why can't you disagree with your friends about politics on social media, but you can do it over drinks at the bar? Because it's not just your friends listening when you're sharing it. And because of that, maybe you want to appease the audience. Maybe you want to embarrass that person as to why they're wrong. Maybe you want your idea to thrive and their idea to die. It becomes this competitive space. It's like going to a debate, right? It'd be like
except for the fact that going to a debate used to be assumed that two people would have sort of divergent opinions and would each argue in favor of them, and that at the end of the night they could shake hands know that they probably still didn't disagree, that they still didn't agree on this, but maybe somebody made a good point. You know, that's a good point. I don't know. I've had that happen. I've argued with people and they've made a good point, and I've said, well, that's a good point. Got me there. You know, I didn't think that through. And that's just what I'll speak specifically of Facebook because I've never been on Twitter, but that's just what I began not to see on Facebook. And I'll be real with you. When I logged on to delete my account and kind of scrolled through some of the posts, I honestly don't know how people look at that. It was sort of like one weird argument on top of one weird argument on top of one weird, like you couldn't, I don't know how you could log on, scroll through that and not leave looking at Facebook more agitated than when you began. Just because it seemed like every post on there was designed to agitate me in some way, shape, or form, in one direction or another.
That's what keeps you coming back. And that's the other thing.
That's not what keeps me coming back to Instagram, and that's not why I've kept Instagram. So at some point, I would like to transition to why you should be on social media.
I think the thing to know about some of that is these are not – so as much as they are posting places where we've said, you know, one person can disseminate information to many people, whether those many people are family and friends, whether they're people interested in your organization or your thoughts.
There's maybe a social good to the fact that 1517 has gotten the gospel out via Facebook to a lot of people.
The thing you have to know is that it's not just a blank posting board. When you put that information out there, there is a computer, there are people – there are lots of different factors that promote material, and it tries to promote material based on how it thinks you're going to want to interact with that service. Once again, these are businesses, ultimately,
well, I think,
right?
One of the things you could talk about is a downside that, the algorithms that show you the things that it thinks you want to see, that sells you the things that it knows you want to buy.
And
Instagram knows what I want to buy.
Instagram
knows.
Say
what
it
I
knows
want
how
buy.
Long your thumb or your eyes were looking at a particular post, right? So if a post that makes you angry captures more of your screen time, it's recording that, and it knows to put posts that'll make you angry. Now, if posts that make you look at trucks,
but we didn't. What I was getting at here, yeah, that's what it knows.
It will
what
put
I
that in front
buy.
Of you, right? And the reason why is because, you know, we forget often that these are products, that these are businesses, but that the money-making model is actually your time. And so it's got to do whatever it's got to do to keep you on there. And for some of us, that is being in disagreement or being upset. And it turns out probably for a lot of the human population, being upset will cause you to spend more of your time on somewhere than like getting information real quick and then logging off, right? You know, just if you see a picture that makes you smile, you'll look at it, you'll click it, and you'll scroll away. If you see something that makes you angry, you'll reread it, and you'll reread it, and you'll think of a response, and you'll come back to it 20 minutes later and write a better response. And then the algorithm goes, man, we got this guy's time. And that's what it's looking for. That's how it makes money, is your time. And so
you mentioned last episode, this was going to be sort of a knowledge or acquisition knowledge thing. I mean, I forget who it was. There's a very long interview with, he wrote a book on why you should delete Facebook now or social media now or something. Kind of this hippie dude who is on the ground level at Facebook and Instagram and all that.
It made it to Netflix. I watched that.
Yeah, and yeah, he's kind of he's like this long-haired, dreadlocked hippie, and
well, there was a bunch talks of about them. How they it had worked for
you guys. Are thinking of two different things, but yeah, the point was the same in both of them.
They purposely, the algorithm, as you referred to it, Caleb. Everybody refers to it that way, is not only designed to feed you, or try to sell you on stuff, but it also keeps you in this you refer to it the echo chamber.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the news you get is what's the word we're using now, curated by some anonymous algorithm, so that your views of whatever your political and other views is constantly reinforced.
And so, when you share information, it's promoting the most entertaining, not the most true. Right? This is why we talk about fake news and stuff. And oftentimes, because of the number of all these social media share how many people have clicked on it, liked it, shared it, right? Something can appear true because there's mass acceptance of that information. And so because something got interactions or because it got approval, it's viewed as true. Really, these things aren't designed to promote the truth. They're designed to promote what's popular and popular to you. And so those two news feeds can look like five different things.
Then there is the sort of more complicated issue of people getting blocked off of social media because they promoted an idea that social media platform has said is fake or not real or not verifiable or whatever, and sort of the reality that happens on one side of the two conservatives more than liberals or progressives and all of that. And I've been in the past made the argument that these are privately owned, so whatever, they can do what they want. But more and more, I'm kind of amenable to the argument that they're
publishers because of this curating
and public forums
and editors,
and editors in a particular way. And I guess I'd be better with that if they were more honest about it. You know, for instance, if they came out and said, "Yeah, listen, we don't like these views, and we're going to get rid of them." Well, at least you know what you're getting at that point, right? And I'm okay with that, but it seems like, it's like a lot of journalism that, purports neutrality when it's anything but neutral. And even the phrase journalism has gotten to bug the crap out of me lately because it's like this category of person that, supposedly is taking on an ethical system for how they disseminate information that is supposed to be quasi-universal and i.e. neutral in the perspective and just the facts, ma'am, just the facts, and is less and less that. That's problematic, but it's also a bit of a buyer beware thing too, which is why, you can say, "We'll delete your social media accounts," and you can still get information.
Yeah.
So, to some degree, I stick with the argument that these are privately owned; they can do what they want. If you don't like it, leave. Literally, where the algorithms get me on Instagram is I follow 4x4 trucks, classic VWs, overlanding stuff. If any of these things, and they have put up political stuff, I unfollow them because I'm not on Instagram for politics. I'm on Instagram for trucks and B-dubs. But where Instagram gets me is it knows what I want to buy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my Lord. Like, I have to have
Instagram
ad budget now because I'm like, I didn't know I absolutely had to have that or I'm going to die. And it's like, yeah.
It's like QVC 3.0,
I do have to have that or I might die. And so it's and I didn't even know it.
And what you can learn from that is that it's maybe that's a safer spot, right? Because it's shaping your views on spending your money. But what you learn from that is that the algorithm is actually pretty good at making you want or think certain things. And so in this talking about information, it's the fact that the company or the editor or the editing robot that they've put in here is actually pretty good at shaping your views, whether you know it or not. Maybe it's just magnifying things you already believed or thought, but it can do that, and it can do that very effectively, and we've seen that on a mass scale. And so, you know, as far as like just sharing information and a place for learning things or discussing ideas, social media has, I think, become like a bad place to do a lot of that.
Yeah. I mean, again, I feel like I have to bring in some of the positive sides here. I do know that there are, you know, good and bad news is probably shared more with a wider scope of people that can support and pray for you in a way that was not possible before. 1517 itself has disseminated the gospel of Christ Jesus very effectively using these what are probably intrinsically evil platforms. You know, maybe nefarious is better than evil. I mean, the intent of the programmers is not necessarily to make
world
it easier to
something.
Promote the gospel, but it, and oftentimes our intents, I think we would qualify as not good even. But you know, these things can be used for the betterment of the church and for the proclamation of the gospel and our effectively, not just by 1517, but by many organizations. And so this is an area of Christian freedom, and like all areas of Christian freedom, it's scary, because you can use your Christian freedom to do some really stupid stuff, and to do things thoughtlessly, and to use words that are thoughtless and careless and unkind and all this other stuff. And to me, this is an extension of that into a world that's a little broader than it used to be, and a little it's weird, at the same time more controlled and less controlled.
Yeah,
like you wouldn't have been able to write a newspaper editorial 20 years ago where you just maligned somebody. Like the newspaper would have been like, nah, we
you
don't.
You could in early America though.
You could in early America, but 20 years ago you couldn't. And now you can just, you don't have to, you can bypass the newspaper and you can just go malign people on Facebook.
There, yeah.
As somebody who's been maligned.
Yeah.
Many times,
successfully. Yeah. Like success. Yeah. I mean, I think all of us here have been successfully maligned to the point where it has reached thousands of people, with great like applause. So it can be very interesting for that. Perhaps as we transition here, one of the things is like, since it's where a lot of people get news, both local and abroad, or the first interaction with it, or maybe political, it's one of the places you get political information, maybe because you follow 1517 on it, or your local church, or your synod, or whatever on there too. It's where you can see some theological happenings or theological ideas. Knowing that perhaps one of the largest problems is this curation or editing that happens either from the company or from a robot or from somebody else. Maybe the thing is here is, how can somebody become their own curator of information to bring it back to the idea of learning, knowledge acquisition? What are some alternative ways of learning how to curate so that you're not creating an echo chamber, but that you're also, you know, getting information that's relevant to you?
That's interesting. Well, first of all, for people that are at mine and Adam's age, robot means a thing that moves in a choppy fashion like this. And so every time you say that, I have to imagine a disembodied robot, and I have a hard.
I just mean automation, okay. Computer automation.
All right. All right. What were you going to say, Adam? Sorry.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what I was going to say. The question you raised, Caleb, that's, I'm sure there are books out on this, but that's the million-dollar question. That's the big challenge in our social world. It's the big challenge in higher ed. Like, how do you discern? It's critical thinking. How do you discern what sources are legitimate and which aren't?
Yeah.
And it's got to be more than just, well, I like the person or they've.
Do you remember when it used to be what book is good and what book's
yeah,
bad?
Yeah.
Do you remember and that?
Yeah, like how do you do? I mean,
now, these days you'd say at least it's a book.
And it's. I don't know if there is an answer, because in the world of like academia, if you will, There are these journals that people pay to publish in. But then there are journals that are, you know, you send in an article that's, you know, maybe makes a unique argument that's never been made before, or unearths like something new that nobody's ever discovered or whatever. But it never really sees the light of day until it goes through what's called peer review, where other real experts, acknowledged experts in the field, look at it. But, and that sounds like a good, like, sort of check and balance. But the reality is peer review is bunk too, by and large.
Yeah.
It's its own echo chamber.
Yeah.
And there are many studies demonstrating this. So if people who are specialists and who are alleged critical thinkers by their credential can't get it right, how can just your common Joe or Jill or Karen or Ken get this? And that's the going back to our last episode on the value of, well, it was more on college, but the value of education, that's where this is all. If you're not learning how to think critically and able to discern what's a good source or what really constitutes science and what pseudoscience and so on, you've not learned anything.
So
this also relates to our like old books episode in this sense. We talked about how one of the reasons to read them is that they would be informative in a more, I want to use the word, generic way than a contemporary source on the same issue. If you read about the politics of Rome, you can watch a political situation unfold in the literature and in the history that allows you to think through ethical decisions, political leaders' actions, what that does to people's responses, and you can see it in a way that isn't the what's going to affect my day-to-day. And you can learn those things, and then you can apply them to how you view maybe a political situation today. And if you're reading about the politics of Rome, it's even if there is a conservative and a progressive ancient politic, how that works in today's world will sort of be up to how you interpret it and were influenced by those ideas working out somewhere completely detached from, is this going to affect how much gas costs in my life?
One of the ways with modern sets of information that I do it is I read and listen to, so let's say when it comes to politics and theology, right? Read and listen to things that I disagree with about by like 20-30%.
So not 100, not the complete opposite.
Yeah. So in other words, I'm not gonna pick up and read, and I might, like if I were doing an apologetics paper or something like that, read a book by somebody who denies the resurrection of Christ. Now I might, if that's sort of what I was researching, right? The resurrection of Christ.
Yeah.
But like just for edification, that's not gonna be sort of theologically edifying to me on the whole. But I would say even like listening to Steve Paulson's Outlaw God podcast, he's not saying things that I all the time that I'm like, yep, 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 yep. Most of the time he's saying things that I'm like, well, there's some of that, you know, maybe 60%, but there's 30-40% of it that I'm like, I'm not sure I agree with the way he said that. I'm not sure I agree with that conclusion. I'm not sure he really thought that out the way I kind of would hope he would. I'd really like to talk to him about that, that type of thing. And I do the same thing with politics. I still listen to the political pods that you guys hate because they say stuff that, you know, is not probably as conservative as your views are. But I still listen to them because I kind of, it keeps me in check. Like, if you let me run rampant, I'm going to, you know, I'm...
Say it.
it's not a good idea, you know? So I do listen to things that kind of keep me in check. And I think as a result, I hear some information that is actually outside of the normal echo chamber for where my natural political leanings would be. And I think that's a good thing. Now, it doesn't mean I'm more enlightened than you two, or it doesn't mean that I'm more right than you two.
Right. Yeah, like moderating yourself is not always being more right.
Right. But it is moderating myself. It is my intentional attempt to sort of pump the brakes a little bit on my own confirmation bias. Because I think the one thing that social media has revealed to us is the confirmation bias is a real thing. It's a real freaking thing. Like, you will seek out the information that you already think is true, and you will seek out the evidence to show how right you really are. Mm-hmm. Just like Instagram knows what I really absolutely have to live.
I think some of this, for me, has revealed maybe some of the shortcomings of the Renaissance and, dare I say, Reformation, in completely maybe too aggressively tossing for some people things like tradition. If you have a group of people who have handed down not only information, but practices, methods of thinking, down to you for operating in the world, that are rooted in generations older than you, that have stood the test of time, both pragmatically and in the realm of ideas, I think there's something to that that helps you, especially when you're first forming opinions, find boundaries and find ideas to play with. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're just completely isolated from a tradition, I find people who tell me that they like abandoned everything they grew up with, either left or right, and became something else really quickly, even if their ideas are right, they're not always presented as sounding correct.
Well, and oftentimes, if you sort of stick with those people long enough, they'll switch again.
Yeah. Now, not to say that that person couldn't become grounded.
Or not that they're not right in every one of their switches.
Yeah.
It's just interesting observation.
Yeah. But there's some of that, where there's like an obvious value to I think, tradition and even family traditions and navigating, like, some of this stuff. I don't know. Adam, what do you think?
I'm not sure. I've got lots of thoughts rolling around my head concerning social media and how we receive it and what's curated for us. And so I only have the gram. I had TikTok for a while because my daughter had TikTok and I just wanted to monitor what she was doing. But of course, you guys were on the receiving end of TikTok videos. I even made a TikTok video with my daughter, maybe two.
There you go. That's but, awesome.
I think of all of the TikTok things that you sent me that I didn't want to see, you did not send me that.
Oh, yeah, I was probably too embarrassed by it. But it's amazing. So we don't get regular streaming TV or whatever in our house, and I don't watch the news. So somebody told me about Ukraine yesterday. I was like, wait, what? When did this? Just kidding. But I am amazed at my aunt, when I go scroll through the gram, how much I agree with everything because it's curated for me.
Right.
I'm trying to think what I get sold. I get sold real estate in Tennessee.
I get the ads for large plots of land places. Yeah,
and like tools. And
Adam, it's interesting that you just said that, like, you just heard some new news about Ukraine that maybe was even a couple days old. One of the things I've enjoyed about, you know, removing a lot of these apps from my phone is like trying to regain a sense that I don't have to be up to the second on every world event.
That was funny. I was listening to a podcast today where they said this whole Ukraine thing it's kind of all encompassing, like watching sports. You just tune in every day to see what's going on and the new images. And I'm like, I sat in a bar in Michigan last week. And beyond it's not the Final Four yet. What do they call it? March Madness being on, and everybody very enthralled with that.
I don't even know what that is.
It's a basketball tournament.
I know, but I don't know how. I've heard about it for 20 years, and I have no idea what the heck people are doing. They're getting brackets. It's
actually, the big brackets. I don't watch a lot of sports, but March Madness is actually a lot of fun to watch if you're around people who are excited about it and understand like how the brackets are built.
So not around me. So beyond March Madness being on, there was actually some images from Ukraine, and I was sitting there going, these are the actual first images I've ever seen from this. And we were about a month and a week in to the whole invasion. Now I've listened to a lot about it. Even some direct reporting and a lot of sort of political commentary on it and whatnot. I actually watched a YouTube video from CuriosityStream about sort of all of the components that sort of went into this, because I was hearing, it's because of NATO, it's because of this. And I'm like, well, this guy did a very good breakdown.
I think that's the potential good in social media. So you get the major news networks, which are always going to, you know, they're going to, basically it's three stories every day on this continuous loop, right? And it's like this, the story that they want you to consume.
Yeah, somebody pre-wrote that story in a storyboarding room, like in Disney.
Yeah, but then, and it's 5 minutes of this huge, like you're going to understand the whole, it's actually not even, it's like 30 seconds, right? With, it might, like in the case of Ukraine and Russia, we've got decades, centuries of historical context and so on. You never get that. But what's interesting, like I think it's, I mean, I know it's TikTok, and which I don't have because I know the Chinese are collect your data from it, but that's why I got off. But you can get, what do you call it, live reporting from just amateurs. Like in the, I think of the riots, was it last, 2 summers ago?
Yeah.
I don't even know.
Yeah, anybody with a cell phone can document what's happening.
Yeah, think of the Kyle Rittenhouse or Rittenhour, or I forget his name, the guy up in Kenosha, Wisconsin, who was up there doing something, and he shot a couple of people and was exonerated not too long ago. Well, I heard all about all that on NPR. Yeah, they reported one sort of story or narrative about what he was doing, why he was there, you know, what his motives were. But then on whatever it was that gave me the information, I see realized footage of what's going on, and the difference is night and day. So in terms of social media, it does allow, it really empowers people to report the facts, to put the facts out there. But back to your earlier question, the big issue here is, how do you know what you're receiving is that you're understanding what you're receiving in proper context? How do you know what you're receiving isn't fake, or what are some of the other terms they use for misinformation or disinformation?
Disinformation.
So even with videos and stuff, like there was one a couple of years ago that was supposedly showing some military conflict, and it was actually just and it went on every major news channel in America. And it turns out it was actually just B-roll footage of U.S. military training on their own base.
Yeah,
and it was being promoted as like a conflict in the Middle East, I believe.
Well,
there's no way for you and me to verify that. We have to trust that the source that is playing it did something to verify where the video came from or what it's of.
Think about, I don't want, you're going to, maybe you need to edit this. I'm not sure, but, and I don't want to get into the political realm here, but think of COVID and the pandemic.
Well, it was very difficult to figure out what was helpful, not helpful, true, not true, exaggerated, not exaggerated.
Yeah. 2-week-old information, 1-day-old information.
Yeah. It was exceptionally difficult. I usually would say, listen to multiple sources, try to get the aggregate, listen to stuff that's not in your echo chamber. And I did all that, and it was still very difficult to figure out what side was up.
Mm-hmm. And then you listen to, so the other day, I forget his name now. Maybe it was Peter McCulloch, the guy who invented the mRNA, the technology for mRNA vaccines.
Yep.
Who's been canceled or, his
removed
stuff is
off of social media and stuff.
He's the guy who invented this stuff. And you listen to his issues with some of these vaccines. And I'm not being an anti-vaxxer. I had to get the vaccine for work, right? And I'm mad as you know what. That I had to get it based on the guy who invented this sort of technology and what he reported on it. Scott, I think you're mad as heck too, right?
I
feel like I've been duped. Well, I don't know. I don't know if you got the vaccine or not.
Well, but, I was, boy, this may need editing, but I was upset. I'll tell you what I was upset about. Okay. I was upset that getting the vaccines was supposed to prevent you from getting COVID. Mm-hmm. And then I get the vaccines and it's like, haha, it's not going to prevent you from getting COVID. And I'm like, bleh.
And you still got it, right?
What?
Yeah. And you got it, right?
Yeah. And then I got COVID and I'm like, wait, this is, I understand now I get it. It's supposed to prevent me from getting really, really sick and dying. I will say, even with the one I was supposed to not get very sick with, the Omicron, I was pretty sick. Mm. I had a low blood ox or pulse ox level. I was sick for a much longer period of time than I was supposed to be with it. And I had both vaccines, and it was the Omicron, not the one that was supposed to kill you anyway. And I'm like, and I only say all this stuff, not to really take a side on it, just to say it was / is very hard to figure out.
Yeah.
What side was up with all this stuff. And the information that came on early on that was so, this is my issue with
so
it.
Confident.
This is all the stuff, this is, you could just say this with any issue on social media that's promoted on social media, whether it's like some dude telling me that I'm not a Christian because of an article that I wrote, or somebody saying you must get the vaccine, it'll save your lives and others, and you won't get sick. And da-da. It's all so definitive with with stuff that's not that definitive.
Yes.
You know, science is empirical, right? It's stuff changes. And I will assume, and to put the best construction on all the COVID information and the vaccine information, I will assume that people were acting in good faith. And as information changed, they changed the messaging, right? Okay. That's putting the best construction on it. There are other constructions you can put on that, though, pretty easily, and get pretty jaded about people, you know, sort of getting a belly full of control and not wanting to let go of that control and wanting that control to expand over other areas of people's lives. I mean, this is not in our anthropology. This is not unheard of.
Yeah.
Right. This is not, it's not an unheard of thing to say that political officials are sinners. Sinners oftentimes act according to their own agenda and their own best interest. And we ought to be careful of that. Right. That's very much in line with our theology to say that. But if you were to say that type of thing, you'd be promoting fake news and could be canceled. And I'm like, listen, I'm stating here what has been blatantly obvious since the beginning of time.
Since the dawn of time, maybe?
There's definitely...
Since the dawn of time. And like, what would be the difference between the beginning and the dawn?
Well, I used to get history papers that would start the first couple words were, since the dawn of time.
Yeah.
Oh, it drove me nuts.
That's so funny.
I just did it.
Well, and on the social media, the thing is that definitive thing can change, and you don't have to acknowledge that change, because as long as that old post sort of gets older...
There is a certain 1984 aspect to all this. I will say there is an Orwellian aspect of this. I heard one today where it's like, no, we never said that. And it's like, what, huh? You know, it's like there is an Orwellian aspect of this. There's also sort of like, and we didn't get into this, we're probably out of time, a Neil Postman aspect of this where, you know, we're having a almost hour-long protracted conversation about what Neil Postman would say is just amusing ourselves to death.
Yeah. Mm.
And he was talking about TV. He wasn't even talking about social media. He was talking about television.
Which has built, like, some of this is just a buildup, right? Like, again,
YouTube certainly
How do we know that, why does the algorithm know that it should send us stuff that makes us want to spend more time? Because spending time in front of something that distributes information is a now, you know, 80-year way of making good money. Right, like these companies
are
like,
these are all businesses.
Yeah.
People are acting in their own best interest to promote the business to make more money.
Yeah.
Hence Instagram telling me all the things that
you should buy.
I can't live without.
Yeah. No. So why should you or should you not delete social media? I think we will leave the final answer up to you, but
we'll leave it up to your Christian freedom.
Yeah, we'll leave it up to your Christian freedom.
Your own critical thinking skills, and encourage you to remember that the people you interact with on social media are still people.
Mm-hmm. And to know that this might be, you know, unlike that college question from last episode where you might only ask this question once every 20 years of yourself and your kids and stuff, this one might be a good one to revisit every once in a while.
Yeah, I think yourself. I should get rid of Instagram. I just love it so much.
Yeah.
I'll send you some stuff soon.
There you go. You
make me want to get
direct
rid of
messages.
It.
No, I love Instagram too. It's full of snark and sarcasm. So.
Well, hey, guys. This kind of series of episodes where we've, like I said, loosely talked about like various ways people interact with, gain, or share knowledge is interesting. Starting with old books to, I think, whatever the opposite of old books is in minute by minute or second by second.
New, quote-unquote, information.
New information on social media. And I think college does fit kind of squarely in the middle there. I think a good little series. We are going to switch over back to some more directly theological topics in the coming weeks, especially with Easter. I think one of the ones you can look forward to is Why You Should Believe in the Resurrection.
Yes.
Will be one of our next ones. And we will do some like that. And we're going to periodically roll in non-theological topics. Again, I think this is a lot of fun having this sort of prompt. And if you have any ideas for episodes inside of this, you can send those to me at the contact form on the 1517 website.
I'll do it now. Why you should take a critical thinking class.
Great. Thank you for listening to this episode. We will catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye.